When I always recommend people when, you know, they're trying to figure out how to act and behave, so just be yourself. And you know the rules and the regulations and the guidelines of where you work. Operate within those guidelines and everything will be fine.
Welcome to the My Future Business Show, where we get you in front of your best audience and keep you there. Not only are we interviewing the biggest names in business to help you become even more successful, we're inviting you to book your spot on the show to help you grow your business. So at the end of the call, make sure you fill in the interview application form at myfuturebusiness.com/interviews. Hi, and welcome to the My Future Business Show. My name is Rick Nusky. I am your host, and I am on the line with Michael Levitt, who is the founder of breakfastleadership.com. How are you, Michael?
I am great. How are you tonight, Rick?
I'm fantastically well. Thank you very much for asking. It's great to have you here with the My Future Business audience today. Michael, we always start off with a little bit about the people behind the business. Would you mind sharing a little bit about yourself with our audience?
Sure. I am one of those individuals that fortunately have the ability to live and be a citizen in two countries. I was originally born in the States, and I've lived in Canada since 2004. So that's gives me a lot of opportunity to work in two different countries as well as observe what's going on in the world. And because those two countries, although we border each other, couldn't be any more different from each other. And as far as my background, I've been fortunate to have a ton of careers in my life. I started off in accounting and then IT management, then somehow, some way, stumbled into healthcare, which was probably the greatest thing that could have happened to me based on the experiences that happened to me about 9 years ago.
Living in Canada, is it generally cold in Canada?
Yes, for 13 months out of the year. No, I'm kidding. It's not that bad. Canada has winters that tend to be a little bit longer than they need to be. We finally today broke 20 degrees Celsius for the first time this year. So we are quite enamored. And for me, I've done a lot of travel so far this year. So I've been out to San Diego a couple times and also in Florida. So I've been in the nice tropical type weather. So I come back and go, wait a minute. Why did I choose to live here again? It's like, oh, wait a minute. Yeah. Job, life, loved ones, you know, all the important things in life. It's only a plane ride away, though, to warmth. So,
yeah, that's it. That's the wonderful thing about it, isn't it? Geographically speaking, I'd love to open up the call today by just letting everybody know what we're talking about. We're going to be looking at in depth creating personal and professional boundaries. But I think from a fundamental standpoint, can you explain to us what that actually means, Michael?
Yeah, boundaries for a lot of people, they will think at first, you know, boundaries dividing two countries or whatnot. But boundaries to me is basically creating a foundation of how you want to be treated and addressed, and also how you should be treating and addressing others. And I think, especially in today's society, as we hear about all of the things that have transpired in Hollywood and a variety of other places with harassment, boundaries have been violated and have been for a very long time. And we're seeing it in government officials in the States and you name it. There's just all kinds of violations with sexual harassment, which is sexual boundaries exist. And unfortunately, people were not observing them. Either the people that were doing the harassing and the people that were being harassed, boundaries were being violated at both sides. So that's the big thing for me. And what I frame my work on is more on the work side of things, but it does bleed over into the personal boundaries as well, is really creating a work-life harmony. I don't believe in work-life balance because balance means you're trying to balance two things at once and things are going to slip here and there. Where you have a harmony, where that comes into play is a reminder that we are one person. We shouldn't try to be two people. We should be ourselves at work, and we should be ourselves at home. It should be the same person. And when we do that, it makes life a lot easier to be able to navigate through the daily challenges that we face, whether we're at work or at home.
That's great insight. I often think about personas and how when we do get to the workplace, we put on this persona and we're a completely different person in terms of our behavior, our outward image, and we don't need to be those things. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, definitely. And obviously, there's going to be periods of time when you're playful, whether you're at a concert or out with friends. You may get a little silly and whatnot. Obviously, you want to behave and not be arrested or anything of that nature. But you should still have a jovial way of living your life. And when you're at work, people should see the real you. So it's easier because if you're trying to put on this persona, as you said, what happens is you're all day long, you're trying to be somebody that deep down you really aren't. Mm. And when you get to that point, you're creating stress within your own self that's being caused by you because you're trying to be something that isn't natural to you. And when I always recommend people when they're trying to figure out how to act and behave, so just be yourself. And the rules and the regulations and the guidelines of where you work, operate within those guidelines and everything will be fine.
There seems to be a takeaway for HR professionals to maybe consider the recruitment phase of all this in terms of revealing the true self during that phase of the employment relationship. Is that something that would be of value to HR type people to take on board?
Oh, definitely. You're seeing more and more when people are interviewing and onboarding individuals, there's more and more personality tests being given. Yes. Skill set is skill set. For example, in the healthcare field, I just recently hired a couple nurse practitioners. Now I had several applicants and every one of the applicants met the requirements that we laid out for the position. So that wasn't an issue for us. Where we wanted to find out where the best candidates would actually come from would be how would they work within our culture? How would they work and interact with the people that we have? Would it work together? Would it be potentially adding an element that could be problematic? There's all these factors in. And as an employer, and especially in the HR field, it's crucial for you to really have a good grasp of who your people are and what their skills are, what their strengths are, and create an environment where they can really, really grow on their strengths and focus on it. Too often we spend time trying to spend all this time on helping them with their negative stuff, and maybe they're not strong in this area. If I have somebody working for me and they're not strong in a particular task, but somebody else in the organization is, guess what? Who's going to work on that task? The person that's really good at it. I'm not going to ask the person that struggles with it to do it time and time again when they're not good at it. And quite frankly, you could lose a really good employee if you continue forcing them, square peg, round hole type of situation. It's like it's not going to work. So try to create the environment where everyone can operate in what I like to call their sweet spot and really do well. Because if they're working at that pace, it's amazing the outcomes you'll see in an organization.
With HR professionals, is this purely intuitive or is there some sort of a statistical process or some sort of evaluation process during recruitment phase that they could use? Because at the end of the day, my future business focuses on beginner entrepreneurs and existing small to medium-sized businesses. And I think this call is largely focusing on the existing business owners. How would you go about that as a professional in HR?
As a professional, for me, it's always been intuition. Now, that's failed me on a couple occasions. And there were times where I saw something in someone that no one else did, and they turned out to be an absolute superstar employee. They exceeded my expectations because I knew what they were capable of, and I also gave them constant reinforcement, constant praise, corrections when we needed to do it, but presented in such a way where it wasn't demeaning to them. It was actually a way for them to grow. But statistically speaking, stats help as well. And I think that's, again, one of those personality tests come into play where you can see, all right, how are they going to work? If you have a type of organization that has to deliver a certain number of things, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's, you know, in the manufacturing world, or if they're doing client work and there's supposed to be so many reports that are generated on a weekly basis or whatnot, then yeah, you're going to be able to run some stats and see, you know, how likely they are to hit those targets. And you can use that in tangent with your quote unquote gut feeling about the individual.
Yeah, it's an incredibly important area. And I'm having this idea of probabilities coming to mind. You know, there's always that opportunity, that chance that no matter how much work you put into that early phase of the employment relationship, that you might hire somebody that isn't a good fit for the business.
Yeah, and I've had people that have gone from being a superstar employee to one of our worst performers. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that happen in a short period of time. Now, mind you, the one of the individuals that come to mind had some pretty strong personal challenges going on in their life, and the organization did everything we could to help that person with time off and understanding of what the challenges they were facing were causing. But at the end of the day, it got to the point where it started to impact the rest of the organization, and the behavior that individual was demonstrating, other people were doing it out of frustration. They're like, well, if they're going to be able to get away with it, then why can't I? So we had to make a difficult decision and, using a Jack Welch term, dehire that individual. And and then from there, it was a wake-up call for everybody else saying, okay, I guess we can't play this game anymore. Let's get back to work.
It's like the one bad apple in the barrel, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It will. Yeah, you will have a whole barrel full of bad apples really quick if you don't address it. And I've always been one to try to address it as soon as possible. Now, sometimes within organizations, if you're reporting to, you know, a CEO or a board of directors, sometimes making those changes can be problematic, mm-hmm. but hopefully if you do your due diligence, you have everything documented, you can demonstrate what it's causing the organization and really lay out the risk of keeping this individual around, what it's going to do potentially to the organization, you can tend to get buy-in from people. And I think, again, that if you're a new person to the organization and you've been there for a couple days and you say, okay, yes, we need to let go Bob in accounting because, you know, he doesn't know what he's doing, but Bob's been there 25 years. Mm-hmm. That's going to come off as, okay, wait a minute, you know, how do you know? You've been here 2 days, Bob's been here 25, what's going on? Mm-hmm. So it's a challenging situation. HR has never been an easy role. And I think as time goes on, it keeps getting more and more difficult. And even in, you know, Canada, there's constant new legislation that's being introduced, new laws, new requirements with medical leave and personal leave and the right to equitable pay across the board, and job posts have to have the salary ranges posted now. So there's positives to it, but it does create some challenges for our friends in human resources, for sure.
I mean, at the end of the day, we're dealing with living, breathing human beings who have needs, wants, desires, dreams, and they've found or sought out your organization for a particular reason. And, you know, mm-hmm. there is that risk versus reward analysis that you have to do for existing employees as well as new workers.
Absolutely. Yeah, you have to take all of those things into factor where it's not this simple, you know, I have this piece and I just have it move around within the organization and it does things and everything gets done. Now, these are, as you said, these are human beings that have families, friends, loved ones, needs, mortgages, yep. pets, children, you know, soccer practice, you know, recitals, concerts, graduations, you name it.
It's all there.
Yep, it's all there. And as the best organizations have the ability to create flexibility for those people to see those and go to those types of events and not miss out on them, because for the most part, many of them just happen once. I've always been a fan of organizations that somehow create ways for people to be able to take time off work when they need to go to those things and not miss them. Mm-hmm. And without being penalized for it, or, you know, given, you know, the guilty look for, you know, taking time off because they want to go see their, you know, their 5-year-old's first soccer game. Yeah. It happens to be on a Wednesday afternoon for some reason, you know.
Yeah. Well, this is incredibly relevant to creating boundaries, because we talk about, this is almost branching into organizational culture a little more, but, you know, at the end of the day, if life is about having deep experiences, which is essentially what it is, I believe, you know, this need for having a business that supports your lifestyle is incredibly important. I wonder if we can spin around back, Michael, on how we would relearn our boundaries from a professional perspective.
Yeah, especially the relearning component, because I find many people don't even have them in the first place. Mm. So relearning them, hopefully they had learned them at some point, and for some reason, life circumstances, the wrong employer, you name it, they forgotten how to deal with it. For me, the best thing for people to learn or relearn boundaries is to really get crystal clear on what's important to them, and really have a plan for how they want to live their life. If they're married and they have children, okay, factor all of those things in. Your spouse has needs, your children have needs, you have responsibilities as a parent and a spouse. So you need to factor those things in and really map those things out with understanding, okay, there's going to be some times where I need to be home earlier, or I need to be home in evening instead of at a board meeting or at a volunteer board meeting, or you name it. And if you don't have those rules set out for yourself, what will happen is you will start saying yes to everything, which means you're saying no to you. And when you start saying no to you too much, you really start driving fast down this road called burnout. And when you do, the cost of that can be traumatic and can be very, very pricey, to you, your loved ones, everything around you. Yeah. Because I've seen too often, both with my personal life and with colleagues that I see going through burnout right now, mm-hmm. is they didn't know how to say no, and they didn't know how to say yes to the things that they should be saying yes to. So getting crystal clear on your life, how you want to spend your life, and then from a work standpoint, really refocus on what are you supposed to be doing? You know, what's your job title? And why did your organization hire you? What are you supposed to do? Now, if it's a small organization, you're doing a lot. You're running the organization potentially. You're also taking out the trash. If the toilet's backed up, you're dealing with that too. It all happens. We've all been there. A lot of us have been in the very, very small trenches of things, and some of us have worked at the largest corporations on the planet. But at the end of the day, too often we're doing things that really we shouldn't be doing, because it's taking away from the things that we could be doing that could really drive the organization further along than where we are right now, just because you're spending time on things that, quite frankly, aren't moving the organization forward.
And you see these enthusiastic people that go out of the scope of their role requirements often, don't you? And it's a very difficult thing to try and, manage them back into their sphere of responsibility.
Yeah, it's a challenge I see with a lot of people that are really good at what they do. Mm-hmm. They think they can be really good at everything. And sometimes you find that occasional individual that is extremely talented in anything that they do. And after I call him a freak of nature, then I say, okay, now we need to scale things back a little bit because you're not getting everything done. Yes, you know, using a baseball analogy, yes, there's those occasional players on a team that could play pretty much every position, which is helpful, but those people don't typically go to the Hall of Fame because they never really focused and became really strong at one role. They've been great. They've been helpful. You know, they're helpful to teams to win championships, but they're not a Hall of Fame player. They are a utility player, like they like to call it. And you have to ask yourself, okay, what do you want to be? Do you want to be a utility player or do you want to be an all-star? Do you want to be a Hall of Fame type of executive or manager? Well, if that's what you want to do, then you're going to really have to narrow down your focus to doing the things that only you should be doing.
That's great insight. You know, we need to have people walking that narrow road within their role within a business. And for anybody who is listening, who is a small to medium business owner trying to address these types of things, this is some sage advice coming from Michael. So thank you very much for sharing that with us, Michael. My pleasure. I'd love to now talk about your book. 369 Days of Losses. That sounds very interesting.
Yes. I'll be brief on this. Back in 2009, and I'll fill in the blanks afterwards. Mm-hmm. But in 2009, over a period of 369 days, I had a severe heart attack that should have killed me.
Oh, wow.
I lost my job. My car was repossessed, and my home was foreclosed. All in 369 days.
Doesn't get much better than that, does it?
and I joke with people, if I had a dog, I would have lost that too. Mm-hmm. But it was a rough year, I guess is the best way to put it. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I tell people and everyone that hears this looks at me and says, do you have three heads or something? It was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. Because I lost everything, but then I regained myself and I gained the opportunity to take a really good, long, hard look at how I was living my life. And quoting Brian Falchuk, who was on your show a while back, as he said, I was an employee of my life. I wasn't living my life. I was punching in and punching out, but unfortunately, I was punching in at 6 a.m. every day and punching out well after 11 p.m. 7 days a week.
Yep.
So I wasn't resting. I wasn't taking care of myself. I was burning the candle at three ends, which I mentioned in my book, because I was burning, you know, beginning and end and in the middle.
Yep.
And then everything came crashing down. And a reminder for those listening, you know, 2008, 2009, when I had my heart attack, you know, there was a pretty significant economic recession going on in the United States and Canada where people were losing their jobs, their homes. The automobile sector was on its last leg and it needed the government to actually bail them out before, you know, GM and Chrysler would have gone out of business. They would have been gone. Mm-hmm. And tens of thousands of jobs, and actually it would have been millions of people impacted by that. So it was a very traumatic period of time. So when you lose your job during a period like that, there's not a lot of jobs out there. Mm-hmm. So you end up going through a lot of exercises and involved a relocation to Toronto to be able to find anything. But, you know, not to dabble too much on those experiences other than the reason why they happened was I lacked boundaries in my life. I allowed for those things to happen. I wasn't taking care of myself. I wasn't saying no to my employers on answering their emails from 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. daily.
Mm-hmm.
And I was ironically, I was working for a startup healthcare organization. And yeah, very ironic, which actually was beneficial because they were the ones to hook me up to the EKG and notice that there was something definitely wrong with my heart, which, you know, really saved my life, which is ironic because I bought that equipment.
Mm.
I paid for that. I bought that equipment for our clinic because we were about a half an hour away from the hospital. So I thought, you know, this would be beneficial for us to have, just in case we need to do a test here before we send somebody a half an hour and they realize they don't really need to have it done. So little did I know when I bought it that I was going to be the one hooked up to it.
You were the recipient.
Exactly, a benefit. Yeah. Nothing like taking your clothes off in front of your coworkers. I was more worried about that. I'm like, oh my God, I gotta take my clothes off in front of my coworkers. I'm like, this is embarrassing, you know, at that particular moment, I was more fearful about, you know, like, I can't believe I'm doing this. It's like breaking every HR rule known to man right now, you know, so something got trouble, you know, but you know, little did I know, that was the least of my concerns.
Yeah, that's just an amazing story. I mean, this is what the My Future Business Show is all about, is actually giving body and real life stories about experiences that are, you know, transition you from one type of lifestyle, and automatically the next morning you wake up essentially a different person.
Yeah. And it was for me, you know, being in the hospital for as long as I was in there, and then the recovery period was very, very strange to me, because up to that point, I've been going, and forgot how to relax. Wasn't resting right, to the point where, you know, for the first, I think, 2 months after the heart attack, I literally had to take a nap every day around 2 o'clock. And that was something that I had not done in years, you know, probably since childhood. So it was, for me, it was like, okay, this is odd. And you know, I was having thoughts, okay, is this how the rest of my life is going to be? Am I going to have to take a nap at 2 o'clock? Now, I'm a big fan of naps. I think every employer across the planet should have nap pods or things for their employees. Mm-hmm. So just, you know, throw that out there. Maybe one day we'll see it.
Yeah, well, you see some of it in where I live. Absolutely, you do.
Well, good. That needs to make it back over to the West, please, because we're still operating on this interesting thing where you have to grind and grind and grind, and it's amazing. And the stats are there. You know, when people take a nap during the day, their productivity and output is a lot better than someone that is, you know, going in for an 8-hour shift and they're doing little bits of work here, little bits of work there. Mm-hmm. The productivity is better and they're a happier employee, and the stats are there. So hopefully we'll get on the mountaintop and we'll preach the idea of nap pods for everyone.
So, Michael, I'd love to just spin back onto your breakfastleadership.com website. What can people find when they visit your site?
They'll find that I've got my podcast show. I have a blog. I've been on a ton of podcast shows over the last year, including, and I'm thrilled that I'm on yours today. And I love the medium on that, because I think in the next 5 to 10 years, it's going to be the norm as far as people listening to quote unquote talk radio. Yeah. Because it will allow people to pick and choose the subject matter that they want to listen to. Now, we've all listened to talk radio before, and sometimes there's segments that we're like, okay, I really want to listen to that. Oh, I missed it because I was in a meeting or whatnot. This gives us the opportunity to pick and choose what we want to listen to, when we want to listen to it, where we want to listen to it, and really grow. Because when I listen to shows, I tell you, it is like going into a classroom and really learning something that I can apply right now. And it's amazing. The takeaways from it, the format is awesome. But on my site, I spend a lot of time, you know, on my blog stuff and podcasts, and also social media. I'm on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. I'm not on MySpace that I'm aware of, but although I keep telling people I should just set up an account there just to say that I am on it now, but I don't, I took a peek at it the other day and it looked more like, the old, your typical news feeds where they're talking about different people in Hollywood and all that. I'm like, this doesn't excite me at all.
It's certainly changed, hasn't it?
It has. But for me, what I do is I work with individuals and groups to really help them on boundaries or burnout. If they're dealing with burnout, how to recover from that, which I've got firsthand experience on what that looks like. And I've also had experience on how to establish boundaries when you don't have them or relearn them. And what I find is the biggest takeaway when I'm working with organizations is this perceived thought of how management expects them to do things. And I talk to the management and they go, that's not what we want. So it tends, more often than not, tends to be just a communication challenge. This is part of it. Mm-hmm. And then the key thing is, in one organization I'm dealing with now, which is actually like the format that we're working on this, oftentimes when I'm brought into an organization to talk with them, it's usually the employees that are bringing me in. They've asked their boss, we want this person to talk to us about boundaries and burnout. And I had a talk this past Friday with a group, and that was the situation where it was the employees that wanted in. But the group that I'm meeting with in a couple of weeks, it's actually the senior leadership that's bringing me in first. Mm-hmm. And to work with them. And from there, then we'll have it work down through the ranks of the organization. I like that format because if upper management says we need to work on boundaries and help preventing burnout in our organization, that means a lot because they see what's going on. And it's easier for me to get buy-in from management because they're the ones that brought me in. Yeah. It's like, okay, let's take a look at this and let's figure out what's going on. Because we see all these stats about everybody hating their job and they want to quit and they want to be an entrepreneur and they want to run their own business and they want to do all these things. And that's great. That's noble. That's how the majority of the organizations that we see today were founded. Mm-hmm. You know, IBM wasn't this 1,000 or million employee organization or Hewlett Packard or Coca-Cola or any of these other big organizations, which they should all sponsor you now because I mentioned their names. Yeah. Edited it out if you want. But those organizations started off as individuals. Yeah. And so I'm not saying people shouldn't pursue, if they've got the entrepreneurial spirit, then definitely give it a chance, give it a shot, with understanding that it's not an overnight thing. For many of us, it's a 5, 10, 15 year overnight success. And it gets frustrating some days. But I also feel that there are many individuals that, quite frankly, I don't think really have the entrepreneurial spirit, but they want to serve and they want to work for an organization that really believes in them and creates an environment where they can work. So for me, my goal is to have these organizations create those environments where people can really thrive and really shine and do their great work, with the hopes that maybe some of those people may actually leave and actually go on to do great things of their own because they've had that opportunity to really grow professionally and, you know, launch out and do something on their own. And then there's some people that, you know, that's not what they want to do. They would be happy just staying with an organization for a period of time and doing some great work. So ultimately, it's just getting all these organizations to operate at their best performance, where people enjoy going to work as much as you can. I think many of us would much rather be at the beach or vacationing all the time, but even then, that gets tiring from time to time, or at least I've been told that. I haven't been able to test that theory yet.
Well, this is what we're talking about. This is that whole notion of creating boundaries or relearning your boundaries from your professional life, your private life. And there has been some incredible insights throughout this call from Michael. And if you'd like Michael's help, you'd like to book him for your organization, reach out to him at breakfastleadership.com. And you are also on other social media channels?
Yes, I'm on Twitter and I'm on Facebook. If you look under Be Fast Leadership, mm-hmm. You'll find me there. Same thing with Instagram. But yeah, the website is a good way to find me. And if not there, then both Canada Revenue Agency and the Internal Revenue Service know where I live too. So just finish. I Just finished my Canadian taxes yesterday and sent those off.
Very
and
good.
I've got my as an expat, I have until June to file my American taxes. But since I was in tax mode over the weekend, I thought, well, let's get that done
get
too.
It so
I
got
exactly be done with it. And it's like, all right, see you guys next year.
I have to say, this is one of those calls where I think I could go into many different branches of HR, in leadership, in organizational culture. I'd love to say thank you very, very, very much for being on the My Future Business Show with me today.
Oh, I had an absolute pleasure, and I'd love to be back. Thank you so much, Rick.
It's been fun having you on the call with us today. Now click on that big red subscribe button and make sure you leave us a comment, share us with your friends, and join the growing list of leading entrepreneurs who have enjoyed their time on the show at myfuturebusiness.com/interviews.